Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, Inc., based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in humid Montclair, New Jersey.
Hey, no humidity. I'm heading out there. I'm very excited. I'm going to be visiting Nolan. We're going to sit out in his awesome little backyard area. And
that's right.
When are you going there?
This weekend, actually.
Oh, yeah,
so I'm working in New York all of next week. I've got a project out there. So I called Nolan and said, hey, if I catch a flight a day earlier, could I, actually get to see the twins? So, you know, Nolan, you're there, Ty's there, but, you know, it's really about the twins.
Yeah. So if you can, hopefully you're a heavy sleeper because the twins have been getting up lots the last couple nights.
What's happening with everybody? It's summertime. It's obviously humid. You know, we've had humidity in Southern California, but I was just in Atlanta and Milwaukee. And so when I got back, I had to stop complaining about the humidity out here.
That's funny.
It's really not humid. What else? What's happening in like real world stuff, design and.
I'm looking ahead to a really hectic August and September, lots of travel. I'm putting together a talk right now for a group of astrophysicists in San Francisco in a couple of weeks,
cool.
Which I am really excited about. So I've been talking to astronomers and scientists and somehow I'm going to have to say something relevant to them. So I'm really excited about that. I just finished working on an interesting map for a client. It was a map of Ethiopia where we had to drill down and highlight different regions, and they wanted things to pop up and be interactive. And I hadn't done this in a long time, but I remembered that PowerPoint does have mouse rollover capability. Mm-hmm. Not in the way most people think or would want it to, but essentially you can set anything or shape or invisible shape. If you roll over it, it can automatically jump to another slide in the deck. So by basically setting a whole deck of different states, you can create this interactive rollover thing with everything highlighting and kind of. So anyway, so that's, I've had my nose down figuring that out recently.
That sounds fun. Well, I got to train on PowerPoint 2010. So I built several templates for this client 2 years ago. 4 days before my training began, I got a note saying that we're on PowerPoint 2010. I liken it to training on a word processor. I mean, I was going back in time, but the training went really, really well.
That'd actually be a really interesting like navigation thing. Like what has changed in the ribbon? Because, you know, the idea of the whole evolution of PowerPoint is the ribbon should stay constant. But I think it's been in flux or a lot of changes from Microsoft for quite a while.
I think the big ribbon change thing was that merge shapes used to be called shape combine or combine shapes, and it was only in the back end. So we had to add it to our ribbons.
And that was a big part of their leveraging that, but they didn't have the tools for it.
Exactly. Yeah, but it works pretty well. It didn't have fragment shapes. It didn't include fragment, but really? It had everything else. Yes.
Huh. Got to remember back to that far now. So I've just been nonstop. Okay, so full disclosure is I sent an email this morning. Hey, Nolan, Sandy, are we recording a podcast today? Because it showed up on my calendar and I completely have forgotten it. And they're like, yeah. So here we are. I've been, set of meetings. I was gone for almost 3 weeks. I was in Los Angeles, Atlanta, Milwaukee, which is very cool. First meeting ever in my home state where I was actually born, Wisconsin. Then I was in Connecticut, a few stops in Chicago and New York. And now I'm happily right here in my home office, which is phenomenal. So this one here is kind of a rant. So just bear with me. So we needed some voiceover talent for an internal project we're doing. So, and we have some fantastic people to work with. But, our it's an internal project. So I don't really want to spend $100+ per hour for something to be done. It's going to be for our company. So I figure, hey, I'll check out Elance, where we occasionally turn to for specialty needs. I was not going for the cheapest offering at all, you know, because I wanted somebody, I could just say, here's a script. Could you just, you know, give this to me? And what amazed me is it literally, I'm going to say 80% of the profiles that I chose to look into had no demo available.
Now, why would that?
How can you hire somebody that says, hi, I have a perfect Southern accent voice and da 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 da. Hi, I'm a, you know, they have a little description. Hi, I have a really rich middle-aged, you know, gentleman's voice. And I'm like, but I need to hear it. I'm not going to hire you based. So I can't even decide if you're a consideration if I can't hear your voice. Public service announcement. If you bill yourself as voice talent, have a type of demo of you speaking so you could be considered.
Can I throw into, can we like to bring that to PowerPoint? I just want to throw out a couple of PSAs. If you, in your portfolio, these are the two things that bug me when freelancers send me stuff. One is they'll include work that they don't love. And I'll, you know, for example, let's say they'll include slides that are filled with content or a bad visual, you know, bad chart design. And I'll ask them about it. I'll say, you know, why did you do this? And they'll say, oh, well, that's what the client insisted on. They insisted on Comic Sans. So, you know, that's what I did. Well, that's fine. But if you're going to put that in your portfolio, go ahead and change it to what you would do. Because otherwise, I think that's your style. So that's number one. And number two is you can't just send me, I mean, initially you can send me PDFs, but ultimately I need to see, just like the real voice, I need to see the actual files, you know, how they're built.
Exactly.
So I, you know, you can't be pulling in just full JPEGs for a slide. That doesn't, you know, show me that you know it.
One more thing, and it just depends on for the project I'm trying to hire for. It's show me your masters. Show me how you started in the back end.
Yeah. You know, it's the same with InDesign too. I want to see source files. I want to see that they're using styles, for example, because or I sometimes jump over it with non-PowerPoint. For example, I'll look at a print designer's work and then down the road realizing they're doing these very complicated print layouts in Illustrator. And it's like, no, no, I can't work with that. So.
Hey, let's transition news because, you know, we could have a whole episode right now on news. I'm pretty convinced we could talk through. We might have to actually limit ourselves. There's a lot happening in the presentation world and with Microsoft releasing stuff, things being released. So like Sandy, there's a big release that you probably want to talk about because it's very newsworthy.
Yeah, I love the Surface Go. I'm not sure I'm going to get one right away, but it looks like a really cool piece of equipment. It's a portable tablet with laptop performance, they say.
Yeah, I was looking at it. I thought it was going to be the next evolution in power. No. I'm a little, I wouldn't compare it to an iPad only because it's full Windows 10. Yeah. But size-wise, it's basically the Surface, Nolan. It's a little bit thinner, but it uses this new processor. The CPU is called the Pentium Gold processor, which I've never heard of. So I'm kind of concerned with how performance-based this is going to be. But everything else about it looks awesome. And it's a little bit lighter. And
it's light. It's very light. Pricing wise, it's pretty $400 for 64 gigs.
So here's the big thing about it though, because they actually added the USB-C connector to it finally. So this is like big because USB-C, I have it on all of our laptops and I love it because it's super fast transfer rates. If it's enabled, this is the thing I was trying to find out. It can also do, it can do power, it can do video, it can do, it can become, you know, you can connect it to lots and lots of docking station solutions.
Now, USB-C doesn't look like the old USB, right? It looks more.
No, it's the little flat one that almost looks like the Lightning. The Lightning Mac connector. It's two-sided, so you can never get it upside down because, you know, every time you plug in a USB cable, it takes three times.
Exactly.
The right way that didn't work, the wrong way, and then back to the right way. Yeah.
That's a perfect description, Troy. That's funny.
So this looks like a lightweight travel.
Yeah, it's more for portable, thus the name Surface Go. I mean, I think they've named it appropriately and they're marketing it appropriately, but we had different hopes.
News. Okay, I got PowerPoint news because this one, it kind of affects a lot of workflow that we've done. Have you guys heard about the, okay, so we're in PowerPoint, we're typing text in, and you're going to list a website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com, because that's part of the conversation. But, then PowerPoint automatically adjusts it to be a hyperlink and it turns to some horrible color with an underline. And, there's obviously ways when we create a template, yes. We actually preset the hyperlink colors, knowing that somebody's going to end up with it in their medical deck. So we should probably make it look decent. Okay. Have you heard that you can now define what the color is of a hyperlink?
No.
Per instance.
This is not
template based. This is, you can actually highlight the text and change it with the text color tool. So when you first type in the website, it's going to change it to whatever the template says hyperlinks are. You can now change the color of hyperlink text to any color. So just highlight the text and change it to be back to the black that all your other text is, or the gray or green or whatever you want. The underline does remain. It doesn't get rid of the underline. So you know it's hyperlink text that way. And it also works on all versions, Windows, the Mac, the iOS, and also Android. Now, I'm not sure on the Android and the iOS if it means you can change the colors or if it recognizes and keeps the changed color. So that's a little thing. I'll put an article. There's a really cool What's New article. It's from Microsoft, and it kind of lists it. It's the Office Insider's little link.
Well,
I thought that was newsworthy.
So that is available on the Mac on Office 365. And that is, in the grand scheme of things, the smallest update that's come to the Mac in the last couple of weeks. There's some big stuff.
What are you excited about, Nolan?
Yes. So big stuff. 3D model support is now on the Mac.
Yes.
You need Office 365 for all this stuff, of course.
Hey, I'm personally excited because at the presentation summit, just a couple of months away, I am doing a 3D model talk for PowerPoint. And now I just have to say, hey, all you Mac people, come on in. We can talk about this.
Well, I'm excited because my astrophysicist talk, I was going to show this version, basically PowerPoint's demo, which was the Hubble telescope. Mm-hmm. So I was going to show them that, and I was going to have to use my PC, but now I can use my Mac. So.
There you go.
Oh, very cool.
The only thing I'll say is I was trying some stuff and it was stuttering a little bit with like very large movements with Morph and 3D. So And I haven't quite tested it on the PC to see if it was a performance issue or not. But the basic things seem to work just fine as the way on the PC. So 3D very is cool. Here. Also, very big news. Font embedding. Finally, is now on the Mac. So it is under the your preferences. So you're going to go to your preferences, and under save, you now have a little checkbox for font embedding. Embed fonts in the file.
That's great, Nolan.
Maybe as another public service announcement, PSA, font embedding may not be endorsed by all designers, but it's kind of nice that it's available as an option.
It is. I'm going to send this recording to one of my clients. I wrote that exact text in an email recently.
I'm still at a point where I'm not recommending it to clients. So, yeah. But it, I mean, we're going in the right direction.
It's
We've been
option.
asking for it for 20 years.
Yeah.
And the really nice people, we've been asking for it, and we finally get it, and we say, nah, no thanks. For the time being. Again, it's another episode. And the last thing, this is a big thing for me, even though it sounds small. But now Mac has convert to shape. So we can now take these SVGs that we've imported from the Noun project or whatever, and we can now break them apart and make them real shapes. So Troy, I know you still had some concerns about using SVGs because they are not always backwards compatible with older versions. But now if you bring in an SVG and you want to make sure it'll be, it'll look fine and work on any version, just convert it to a shape and you're done. Mm-hmm. So that was a big little missing thing for me, which means my workflow is now complete on the Mac for bringing in icons.
Okay, because we can go on, we're probably like 15 minutes into our episode here. Let's transition.
Okay.
Okay, remember that scene in the movie Inception when we figure out everything is a dream inside of a dream that's possibly inside of another dream. That is what video round tripping in PowerPoint is like. It's creating content in PowerPoint that is exported to a video. Then that video is brought into PowerPoint on a new slide. So a slide with a video of PowerPoint content with another PowerPoint content layer. And well, it's mind warping, possibilities are endless. And we have a great podcast to talk all about it today.
That's funny. That's perfect. The perfect description. But before we get into the fun and mind-boggling details, let's start with a little bit of the history of PowerPoint and why this is even a possible conversation.
That's good. Let's do it.
Yep. So I'm thinking, starting in 2007, that was when we first started to be able to embed a video into PowerPoint. Previous to that, it was all done by linking. You remember those days where we had to package the video into a folder and zip the folder and send the PowerPoint presentation along with the. So it was a hassle. 2007, we began to embed it. 2010, we can embed it. But now the Z order, we have a little bit of control over the Z order. Meaning
that was like.
That was big.
Massive. That was huge.
Before we had to do it with controls. I could do a little.
Just explain Z order to.
Sure. It's the layering of objects on the slide.
It's the front to back order.
Yes. Yes. So
before a video would always jump in front of anything.
Right.
Right. Which you could use to your advantage back then. I used it, you know, as a feature, like, hey, we're going to do this and this will pop in front. But say you're working in a medical field and you need to, per regulation, and you need to, you know, cover up patient names and stuff.
Right.
So, you know, somebody puts a nice box over the patient's name of this video showing an angiogram or something, but the video plays and it pops in front of that little box and hey, the information is revealed. So yeah, Z order is like massive for making video use in presentations far, far more relevant in a lot of different arenas. I mean, from a design perspective, you can do a lot, but it actually made functionality or not functionality. What do I want to say? It made it practical to use videos where,
yes,
in a lot of areas.
I think that was the first time it came. Embedding helped make it more practical, but the Z order made it really a desirable tool.
2010, other things happened. 2010 was big for video.
Right. We were able to export video as a native option. Wasn't that the first time we could file export? Yeah, okay.
Exactly. Yep. But it was limited to WMV.
That's right.
So it wasn't the best video quality, but you could just do it simply. I mean, prior to that, I used Camtasia massive amounts prior to this to capture or, you know, to use its export video. Did you two use Camtasia?
I didn't so much. A lot. Mm-mm.
Then we go into 2003. Next up, Sandy?
No, I think 2013.
2013. Yes. Sorry, 2003 is where this whole thing
did not work. Exactly. But that the good news with that version for what we're talking about today was the MP4. We were able to export to the MP4, and that was big. I believe, though, the resolution was, gosh, I can't remember what it was. The good news is in 2016, Office 365, and it could have been. No, I can't remember. But when did we start 1080p?
I think it was 2016. I think in 2013, you were limited to 720p, but you could use Shom's video export add-in to kind of, you know, get a higher resolution. So yeah, 2016. Well, they added 1080, and then more recently, we have the new higher res, the 4K.
That was like months ago, wasn't it?
It wasn't that long ago. Yeah, because the new one now is, so it's 3840 by 2160. So it's kind of a mixture of 4K resolution options. It's not a full 4K, but it's still, it's really good.
Troy, I bet for what you do, you'll want to use that a lot.
Do that quite a bit, actually. Yeah, it works out good.
I don't, because my clients barely can use MP4s. And so I'm still using 720.
Yeah. So scenarios where each of us use this concept of video round tripping. Maybe let's just start there to say, hey, here's what we use it for.
I used to use Keynote actually a lot as a poor man's video editor. And would just make basic videos using, you know, if I needed to cut things out or combine, you know, combine little segments into one video and then just export it, bring it right back into Keynote. You know, partially out of laziness, but also because it just worked.
And now you could do the same exact thing in PowerPoint as of, well, 2010, really, but 2013 is where it really started catching on.
Yeah. So if you needed to, you know, a lot of times people just wanted to combine a couple clips into one video. It's like, great, I'll just, you know, I'll just do it in Keynote and, you know, not even bother opening up the video software.
So I use it for very simple use. It's looping an animation sequence. Now, since a couple of our people in our community have discovered a way to loop animation in PowerPoint using a sound file. But what? I haven't. Glenn Millar, a couple of years ago, discovered this little hack. And then more recently, I believe it was Tom Howell found something where you are able to loop animations using an audio file. You have to have a silent audio file and you use markers and you place your animations and you're able to loop the audio. But anyway, that aside, I would export to video and then import the video for that looping effect.
I think it's pretty much the same thing, but my most common use I have is for complex animation where I'm more concerned it's not going to run smooth on the client computer. So I'll export that slide as a video, add a new slide to the presentation with the video. So basically, in presentation view, you go from PowerPoint content to a video of a slide with a really complex animation so that it runs smooth, because now it's just running a single video playback as opposed to, I mean, some of the diagram animations, you know, there's hundreds of moving elements and it takes some processing power. So the video playback is perfect, but I also keep the original slide in the deck. I just hide it. So if there is any edits or the client needs to use it or we need to use it, it's not some mysteriously gone place. We just put a little label that says this is the editable version of the video playback on the previous slide. So, you know, I try and keep it together. But that's probably my most common use is really complex animations where I'm concerned about stutter and other performance issues.
So that's happening still? Or is it just the animations you're doing are so crazy that you're pushing the limits of PowerPoint and that stuttering is happening? I remember a few years ago, it was more of a problem.
Well, stutter like a long motion path, that was a different type of stutter. And that's been pretty much resolved. I mean, there was a Windows registry hack to basically increase the buffer to resolve that, but that's kind of been implemented now. So it's not as big a deal. Now there's a lot of, so if you have a mechanical process and you're going to show the flow of how things happen, I mean, you could have several hundred animated elements on a slide showing this is going to go to here and this is going to go to here and then this is going to happen. And that's a lot of rendering, for PowerPoint, and I'll just say less robust computers can definitely have a pause and a stutter. So yeah, those type of things.
So to do that, we need to export slides to video. So first we should talk about creating videos of slides.
Okay. Show of hands. Who here has exported slides to video using PowerPoint's built-in video export, which is just file export. Wait, is it file export or file save as?
It's both, hold I on. Believe. I think you could do both.
I know you can go file export and then it's create a video. I'm going to look at save as. If I go to more options, is a video an option in the dropdowns? Blah, 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 blah. Nope, it's not in the save as. So it is file export only.
Okay.
So file export, and this menu has kind of, or this dialogue has kind of changed. But yeah, currently it's file export, create a video. And then you get your options of sizes. Have both of you done this?
Occasionally, it's not really, I don't really do it that often. We're going to talk about difference between Mac and PC.
Sure.
On the Mac, you can do MP4 or MOV.
Correct.
On the PC, it's only, MP4, correct?
Actually, you can get to WMV still, it's like a legacy one and it's buried and we don't recommend people find it. So that's okay.
So currently on the Mac, your options for either one are, you only have three: presentation quality, internet quality, or low quality.
This really bugs me because they're the same resolution. Why can't we just name them the same? So like low quality on the Mac. Do you have it open, Nolan?
Yeah, I do.
I don't have a Mac with me right now.
It's 480 by 853.
853? Yeah. Oh, wow. It's 852 on the Windows side. Interesting. Interesting. I've never looked at that closely. I always just look at the last number. So what do you call it? We call it HD on the Windows side, which is medium file size, which is 720p. And it's called something different on the Mac.
Internet quality,
of course.
Whoa.
Because 1280 by 720. Yeah.
Yep. And then the full HD, which I thought was a funnier name yet.
It's like the full Monty, is 1080 by 1920.
Yeah, but what's the name of it? The preset name?
Presentation quality.
Yeah, presentation quality, which is
what does that mean?
Kind of cool. Wow. So, and then on the Windows side, just finish off, we have what's called Ultra HD or 4K, which is 3840 by 2160, which is, I think, a good addition there. So yeah, I actually, it's kind of funny that one of the numbers is a pixel law, a difference.
Yeah.
But the naming structure, it's like, hey, shouldn't we be consistent on this? The reason the Mac has MOV is because it's just part of the operating system. Yeah. MOV is like the native file format for Mac. And I think that if you're on a Mac, you could make all of your video friends happy by just taking advantage of it. Not that I've been caught guilty of like taking a file we created on the Windows, opening it in the Mac just to use the video export so I can hand a video editor an MOV. I could also make it an MP4 and cross convert it to an MOV, but I just do a native MOV and they're like, oh, this is great. I'm like, you know, it's only a Mac thing. It'll never come to the Windows side because it's not supported by the operating system.
I have a correction corner. We can save as an MP4 or a WMV. Yes. Files, save as, and then go into click browse underneath it's under XML. It's MP4 and Windows Media, a WMV. And it saves the exact same way, but it doesn't let you choose the file size, the file format. File size.
Oh, there's MP4. Yeah, you're right. They're in the list. Yeah. I went right past them.
The only reason I'm correcting you is because I blurted out, yes, you can. And I wanted to redeem myself.
Well, you were right. So as a side note, this is a total aside from our topic here. When you go into the save as options, I don't understand the rationale of how they're the ordering of those. Why is I'm trying to find one way down the list. Why does it have like a bitmap? First of all, they call it a device independent bitmap. Why don't we just call it a bitmap? But why is a BMP all the way down the list right on the top and bottom of it is TIFF and Windows Metafile? You know, there's no alphabetical ordering either by the extension or, just a side rant.
Yeah, there you go. You're right.
Hence the fact that I missed MP4 because I was looking for it alphabetically. Okay.
So you can do it. Yeah, you can. Not that you'd want to, but you can.
So let's talk about these resolutions. Troy, do you always do 4K at this point or like when?
Okay, Nolan, thanks for bringing us back on topic. No. The most common is 1080p. You know what? Actually, I'm going to take that back. My most common for client work is 1080p. My most common I do is for the blog, because the blog, we use video examples all on tons and tons of the blog posts for the PowerPoint blog, my other kind of little side thing going. And I export kind of smaller ones there. I actually use the I was going to make fun of the Mac naming, but I can't remember the name of it. But I'll use the standard or the 480p size for a lot of the blog stuff. That's probably my most common use one just because I have a kind of a niche for using that. But 1080, I think, is the most common. I still use Shom's video export add-in to get larger sizes because I can create some custom sizing that just PowerPoint shouldn't invest time into this. You know, as example, I've exported 8K video with a custom PowerPoint setup presentation. So the presentation is actually sized for that really long, long rectangle, but it's basically 7680. So 7,680 pixels wide by 1080 high, or you can think of it as four side-by-side HD projectors, 1920 by 1080. Well, I need a video of that. And I turn to Shom's video export add-in, which is free and still a highly functional piece of software out there. Thanks, Shom, to do things like that.
So what is the largest resolution video you've ever or is that what you're talking about now?
Well, that was pretty, every show is different. We were just doing a whole bunch. Now we did not do, we mocked them up in PowerPoint, which was kind of cool. We did this workflow where we did animated video titles for all the presenters at this meeting. And it got a little bit interesting because there was two side screens that were normally used by IMAG. So those are 1920 by 1080. We had these large, I'll just say diamond shapes screens that were kind of flanked the stage, and they were huge. They were like, 16-foot high diamonds. And they had video projection in them. And then we had our main screen, which I believe was probably just 4K. So something like, 4,000 pixels wide by 1080. Well, we wanted to make videos that went across all of them. So, this big explosion effect would start on the outer left and right and would zoom across all the screens, explode in the middle, and the name would appear. So we kind of mocked that up in PowerPoint because it was easy to make a little puppet show out of it. And when they said it, we did the actual work in After Effects and Premiere, and we exported them there. But I think our total pixel count on that one was closer to 10,000 pixels wide. Mm. So, it's big and fun and, special to use. So I kind of used PowerPoint, but it wasn't for the actual real thing.
It's for the brainstorming. It's the mock-up.
It was more to get the client to approve the budget. Which is really important. And they were really cool. I've got a couple of videos of some of them happening, and it did work out really well. Okay, so maybe to make this relevant to kind of everybody amongst, ourselves and everybody joining us, let's just list some projects where we've used the video round tripping, the idea of making something in PowerPoint, exporting it to video, and bringing that back into PowerPoint. Because this is where, we don't really do input from people, but it'd be great to hear everybody else's examples, because this is where you just get total creativity. Like, hey, I know I can solve this problem. Nobody can pre-think these problems. So examples.
An explainer video for a complex process. I did that a couple months ago, explaining some complex new website and how information comes in and out. So we did that, put it right back into PowerPoint, which they used in PowerPoint, but then also occasionally just used as a video.
Oh. Cool.
How about, I get a video, it needs banners. It needs an opening banner.
Like lower thirds or?
Like the full frame, like a video, like an opening slide?
A title slide, a title opener. So, create that, insert the video into PowerPoint, then export it. And I've got it. I've got an open and a close.
Okay, you know what? I'm going to actually change my first thought, because what you just said there, Sandy, my daughter's working on, she has a very awesome YouTube channel. If you're into fashion, I should probably list it because it'd make her happy. But she was doing all this video editing. She's like, well, how do I do titling? She was working she was jumping into After Effects to do titling. I said, okay, here's what you need to do. Let's make this real easy. So we jumped into PowerPoint. She designed an opening banner. Animated it, exported that out as video. Now, she didn't bring it back into PowerPoint. She then took that video piece, dropped it into her video project, and she had instant title openers. And then she also did some lower third banners the same exact way. So animated lower third elements that she could drop into Premiere, which was really awesome. Okay, but my real example that I was going to go with that I kind of jotted down here is award shows. So I want to have some animated elements happening underneath the name reveals and stuff. So what I'll do is I'll actually create a separate presentation of all these little animation things. Maybe it's a photo collage that I want to kind of build in. Maybe it's a glitter. Maybe it's all kinds of stuff. So I'll create my video element that's the exact size of the slide, export it as a video, drop that into the awards presentation, then put my animated name and other information on top of it. So I use video round tripping quite a bit to build out my accent graphics.
Animating a chart in the way you want it animated, which sometimes means breaking it apart. I have a tutorial up on YouTube on how to create animated and growing bubble charts, like the Hans Rosling effect. But again, you have to break the chart apart into shapes first. And then you take a video of it, then you can drop it back in the PowerPoint.
Cool. I've done introductions to my clients' presentations that way, or stingers. So a client gives regular webinars and they want their logo to animate with a little bit of a soundtrack over it. So I've done that for them using PowerPoint.
So again, like poor man's video editor or poor man's After Effects.
I'll just talk about that right there. It's making a video with PowerPoint as the development platform. I have an example where, like, say I've given three TV commercials and the client wants them to run back to back. Well, instead of putting in three videos, now I've got to, you know, manage those, and I have to either do them on three separate slides with an auto transition. Side note, I believe auto transition shortcut, or the little hack for making a transition happen automatically after a video is broken. I need to experiment with that more, but it didn't work with me last week. So, you know, I could do that. Or I could layer the animation. I could take the videos and layer them in there. Or I could just put each of them on their own slide and say export video. Now I've got one video of all three TV commercials, drop in one video. There's only one asset to manage. The client doesn't have a hard time of figuring out how things work. And there, I've done the video round tripping, literally. Mm-hmm. The video editing and the video round trip were all done in PowerPoint for PowerPoint.
There you go.
Awesome. It's a great tool.
You know, the other reason, I'm going to add one more, only because we kind of mentioned it, and, you know, lower thirds. Have you ever done like a video where you want to do lower thirds? Like, you know, the little ticker, not the little ticker, but the little intro along the bottom. So I play the video and I'll animate on a, you know, a bar, and then I'll put the, you know, the date and the location of where this was shot, or whatever the reasoning you want to lower third or title a video. And then I'll export that slide as a new video. So now I've got the lower third baked into the video.
Yeah. I mean, even if you don't export that and bring it back, if you just want to stay in the world of PowerPoint, that's a great way to instead of going to your video editor and saying, oh, you need to put in lower thirds, you need to do this. You can just drop those right on top because of the Z order. You can drop those right on top, animate them in on clicks, on predetermined points. So,
I said it earlier and I can't remember what I said.
Come on, Troy.
The bookmarks?
Bookmarks, that's it.
I'm paying attention.
Yeah, you can set a bookmark for the lower third to come in, come out. You can animate stuff on top of it. You can do a circle something on a video. You can do all that.
I have a confession. Well, I have a confession. I rarely use bookmarks.
I will actually second that because they're so temperamental to use.
Yes.
I actually find it easier just to move my animation pane to a second monitor and just time it out over there and do my animations there, because I can adjust them. Bookmarks are, you know, if you mess up one, you got to start all over. So yeah, that feature could be so improved and so much more functional.
Yeah, I don't use it. And I have another one. Uh-oh. And I don't know if I was just experimenting, and that's what we do in our business. We learn great, exciting things. You cannot export a YouTube video as a video.
Oh, and I'm talking a linked.
YouTube video. And that makes perfect sense, but I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah. But you get a perfectly timed black box.
Yeah. So we've all done it. Okay. Okay, how about cinemagraphs?
Yeah, so cinemagraphs is something that I haven't played around too much with, although I actually have a client right now who wants one. But I've seen people do some incredible things with cinemagraphs. In fact, a couple years ago at the presentation summit, Ashley Karnitsky, I think.
She did an awesome job.
Yeah, did a great little demo of how to do this. So essentially a cinemagraph is where you have a still photo, but one portion of that of still photo is moving, is video. So for example, you've got an image of a person at a record player, everything's static, but the record's spinning, or somebody's in front of a candle and the only thing moving is the flickering of the candle. So you can make these in Photoshop or, you know, other software, but you can do it in PowerPoint by selective layering and screen grabbing and layering things over and masking stuff out. And it's awesome. And then you can export that to a GIF.
If you want to,
yeah, or just or keep it in PowerPoint or export it as a video or whatever.
Okay, so I will say, if anybody is not familiar with the idea of a cinemagraph, there is a great collection of them online. Go to cinemagraphs.com, and it's just really, they're really, really nice ones to look at. You could probably borrow them as well. But yeah, they're very cool.
There are a lot of artists and photographers that do really beautiful stuff with them.
Like, yeah,
not, it's funny. They're not, it's not as cheesy as a lot of, you know, like GIFs, for example. Like if you just Google GIF, you're going to get, you know, some awful stuff.
Well, the idea is it's a seamless loop, so you can never find the beginning or end point. And when they're done well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sandy, you ever done cinemagraph in a presentation?
Just a couple of times. I really should do it more often. I did a flame for an Olympic themed presentation. once, and I recall doing clouds. I don't think I did it in a loop though, so it couldn't be an official cinemagraph. But I love that look, the appearance of everything else is solid, is steady, and the clouds are floating in the background.
So, you know, it wasn't a cinemagraph, but it was a cinemagraph. So what we did is, because you just mentioned clouds, I did these for title slides for a meeting.
Okay.
We had this, you know, background, and it kind of, they had the logo of the event had kind of a mountain range, you know, just a vector mountain range. Mm-hmm. So I took that concept and we made the lower half of the slide just solid for the name and the person's credentials. But the upper half, I actually took that mountain range, put it there, and then I just put a seamless loop of clouds behind it. So every time a title came up, there would be clouds just kind of floating by and the name would animate on. So it was kind of a cinemagraph look, but I actually didn't export it as a video. So it's not totally in line here. But you mm-hmm. said clouds and mm-hmm. a loop. And yeah, so I just layered a video behind it, which I could have exported and made my own cinemagraph.
Absolutely.
So I occasionally develop them more like that. They're usually like a meeting holding slide, like the walk-in look or the break, you know, where they want something on screen, but kind of want a little bit of interest going. And I usually do it because of except for the conversation we just had earlier, which I'm going to have to ask you about more, but it's usually because of the ability to loop a set of animations is not possible in PowerPoint, at least for me, without a side trip into VBA land, and it's not worth that effort. So I'll create a cinemagraph type of slide that I export as a video and I'll use that. And I did use, speaking of the cinemagraphs.com, I did use, they have an awesome passport image. It's like you were saying, Nolan, everything's static. It's got an old classic camera. It's got a whole bunch of travel stuff on it, but then there's a passport and the pages of the passport just flip. Mm-hmm. They just randomly flip. And I use that for the announcement of a President's Club trip. So, you know, the president of the division is getting up there. He's like, hey, we're going to do this really cool trip. And the big deal is the reason I used it is they said it was going to be an international trip this year. No, traditionally, the President's Club trip has actually been a domestic thing. And this time they were taking them, you know, international. So I knew I wanted to find a passport thing. And yeah, it worked out really cool.
Nice.
So it just did its little thing while this guy announced. Finally, he said, here's where we're going. And we ran to a video. So it's a perfect way to engage the audience without totally distracting. Okay, I got just an odd one here that falls in line with this. Have you ever used the video export to lock or protect content? So basically it becomes view only, but not editable or accessible.
Well, not for security reasons, more for proofing reasons.
Okay, absolutely. Yes, yes. I hadn't even thought about that line, but yes, we do video proofs. I do an online, Whipster is an awesome online proofing system. Highly endorse it. So we'll export videos and put it there and we get all the comments right through that. Nolan?
I personally have not, but I've heard of a lot of people doing it as a way to lock down, especially if you have lots of animations. That's sort of the big thing to show that. Actually, you know what? I have done it on occasion to make sure that they're seeing the animation the way that I'm seeing it. When I'm in doubt, or I think they might be on an old.
Oh, okay. And so a proofing thing as well.
Yeah, exactly. For example, like Morph, I just ran into this and I probably should have. I kept sending something to a client and I assumed, or we had talked about it, I thought they were seeing Morph because, like, yeah, we're on Office 365. And then down the road, they were like, yeah, it's not. They said something. I was like, no, that's not the way it should be happening.
It was so like a fade.
So I sent them just a quick video of like two slides and they said, oh, yeah, no, we're not seeing that. Like, so you're not on Office 365.
I've done it on a few select slides, not the full presentation of content, although I've seen it done by some pretty adventurous or creative sales teams as a way of making sure people can see their content in PowerPoint, but it's not PowerPoint. So the only reason I brought up was that. But you're right. Proofing is another – we do that all the time. I just didn't think about it that way. I know we kind of talked about it, but video editing – in PowerPoint is kind of in this idea. It's like, how do we take content in PowerPoint, export it as a video, and then ultimately for the round trip is pull it back into PowerPoint. I describe mm-hmm. the three TV commercials, you know, I stitch them together in PowerPoint, export it and drop them in there as one video. You guys do anything else along those lines?
Not exactly.
No, I've done the opposite. I've split them. a split of video.
Oh,
using the,
yeah,
you know, the start and stop, and then reinsert them as clips.
That I would totally get too. So yeah, especially if somebody gives you like a 30-minute video, like, hey, we want to use these 9 seconds. Like, how if I just save out the 9 seconds so I don't have this humongous 2 gig video in my file? I could, you know, make it nice little 40 megabyte thing.
That's funny. Nice little 40 megabyte thing.
Size is relative, you know.
I know.
Anything else we want to talk about on video? I mean, this is like a cool topic to like to hear everybody else's ideas because it's used so many ways.
Yeah. So send us if you've been using this for other purposes, let us know. Drop us a line, email us right after you give us a rating on iTunes.
Exactly. Remember to rate and review us. Comment on iTunes, and that helps us be easier to be. I guess raises us to the top.
Yeah. Yeah. We haven't really made that request. And I know there's lots and lots of people. We keep steadily seeing, again, the metrics we get are really just the iTunes download. So if you just click and listen, it doesn't actually metric it, but a review does. And I'll just say, if you go to the presentationpodcast.com, you can go to contact. There's a little online form. It drops us an email instantly and automatically. Or if you have our personal emails, send it to us that way. The reason, you know, we didn't talk about is where the idea of round tripping came from. Sandy, do you remember round tripping stuff to HTML and bringing it back in to remove bad coding, basically, out of slides?
I do not. The first I heard of round tripping was from Glenn Millar.
Oh, for video work then. Yeah, the whole idea of a round trip was PowerPoint had a great HTML export. So what you do is you'd export your presentation to HTML. You didn't really care about that because then you would re-import it back as a presentation and things would miraculously work. No, like templates would get so messed up. And this is back in the days of 2003 when templates were not really robust. So yeah, we should get Steve Rinsberg would have a lot of tales because he created a lot of information and a lot of help information on how to accomplish this. That's the idea of round tripping. And then when it came into video, it's like, hey, we can use that same concept. Get it out there, make it something new and bring it back in. So it's a great, fun topic. Thanks for joining us on a little rambling conversation here. We're going to go through some pro and tech tips just to have some fun and end the day.
I'll start.
Perfect. What do you got?
The Presentation Guild has released its annual salary survey report. So it is out there. I put a link into the notes. Anyone who is a member gets it free. Anyone who participated in the survey and gave us their email address gets it for free. Anyone else who wants it, because it is very insightful. There are some really interesting data points regarding length of time in the business, women in the industry. I just recommend it for anyone. Anyway, anyone can buy it at $69.
I think it's well worth it. I just got an email, well, within the past few days saying, hey, you were part of the survey. So I got a question for you at the end of this, Andy. So it was very cool. I got an email that said, hey, the survey's out. I was like, well, I've already had it for a week or so because I went and found it myself because I knew it was there because Sandy Johnson may have tipped me off. And I was reading it while I was flying back from New York. And I was looking through it and it had some really cool stuff. So here's my 2-part question, Sandy, all about this. Actually, 3-part. One is, I thought for sure you're going to list that in part of the news because I think it's a very newsworthy presentation industry thing.
I was going to.
It's very, very cool. Number two is, because I just got this email that says, hey, you participated and we're giving you a free copy. If I was not a member of the Presentation Guild, which would be stupid, just slap me if I wasn't, but would that person also get a copy of the survey for free just because they helped provide data?
Yes. We offered that in the beginning. If you participate in the survey and opt in with your email address, because we don't capture anyone's private information, we will send this to you.
Okay. That's super, super, really, really cool. And three is am I allowed to say this? It's funny. I actually have it open on my computer, but it's not because I was looking at it. I had just done an Adobe update before we started this. And one of the main updates was to Acrobat. So I just clicked the first PDF sitting on my desktop, which happens to be the Presentation Guild survey. So one of the things that I found really interesting was the data point you collected on your main area of concentration, which I thought was a cool way of saying, do you work on presentations or what do you do? It was like over 50% were design or create presentations. And what caught me as a really interesting point was that like the presenter speaker was only 1.5% of the respondents. I thought there would be a lot more.
Right. That caught me. That's not exactly. It seems that we couldn't get that group to participate in the survey. I mean, so it's good information. It doesn't mean that that represents the sample of the world.
So if you're a presenter or a speaker, you need to participate in this next year because you're being Indeed. Misrepresented mm-hmm. or minority representation. And if you want to read the other, it looks like 8 categories, you have to go get the survey yourself. I'm not going to give away more.
Here's what I found was insightful is that a lot of people who are hired to do other jobs are spending an awful lot of time doing presentations.
That's one of our main sales pitches is, hey, you guys spend a lot of time in this program. And it's time where you should probably let an expertise channel, i.e. any of us talking, take care of this for you while you focus on your expertise channel, because ultimately you'll have a better return on your investment. I mean, that's kind of one of my common sales lines.
Exactly.
Let's see here. Pro and tech tip. Mine is very geeky. If you have an iPhone 7, 8, or iPhone X, the cameras on them are nice, but you can add on lenses. The problem is with external lenses is they're all designed to clip onto the phone without a case. So as soon as you put a case on, it changes the depth the lens is going to fit and it doesn't work. So I found a case called the Revolver. It's literally a case and then a magnetic mount for a camera lens that fits on there perfectly. It has 3 different lenses, a wide angle. It doesn't have telephoto. I really wish it would, but it has a wide angle. It has a polarizing lens, which is really cool. So if you're shooting, I'll just say if there's glass behind you, you can rotate it till the glass does not have a reflection. And then it has a, what do you call the round bubble? A fisheye. Anyways, $40, probably the coolest thing I've bought for my phone in a long time. Been carrying it around for several months now, and I use it for a lot of photos because it's just great to capture the wide angle.
Mine is the Apple Genius Bar. We all know about it. I've used it, dozens of times over the years, but always for products still under Apple Care. But my iMac was having some hard drive issues and it became non-responsive. So it was out of Apple Care. So I was sort of already preparing to get my new iMac. It's been 3.5 years. It's time. But I brought it in just to see if they could take a look. So they analyze everything. They test everything, even though you're out of Apple Care. And it ended up being one of the 2 hard drives had gone bad. So they replaced it with labor. It was like $200 and change. So I was very surprised. I thought it was very, very reasonable. If it's, like a logic board or something, it probably would have been time for a new computer. But anyway, so even if it's out of Apple Care warranty, the Apple Genius Bar is still really, really good. And I just was reminded of that fact a couple weeks ago.
I am going to compare that to having to replace the screen on my Samsung, I think it was a Note 5 at the time. This was a year ago or maybe a year and a half ago. I wasn't ready. I couldn't renew. I had to replace it because it became non-responsive to touch. It cost $300 to replace my screen. Oof. Yeah. That's amazing.
I paid less to swap out a hard drive.
Hard drive. Yeah. Wow. Good stuff.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a design studio team focused on presentation design. You can check us out at tlccreative.com, our blog, thepowerpointblog.com, and you've obviously found us here at thepresentationpodcast.com.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. Subscribe for lots of goodies and other stuff. And if you're looking for on-site training in data visualization or presentation, give me a call.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwhiz.biz, the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org. And I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and Twitter as PPTWhiz. And just one last reminder, everyone, rate, review, and comment on us on iTunes.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.